welcome to our kickoff audit committee meeting. This is exciting for us. This is new for us, even though we have had a charter for 4 years now, but a much needed function of the city and the overall finance and audit.
I think we should meet once every 4 years.
Well, it's going to take a while.
Whether we need to or not.
So I've tried to, this feels like a long agenda, but we'll go through things pretty quickly just to give a brief overview of audit itself, the two sides, internal audit and external audit, kind of some of the differences where we might have some gaps in our current existing practices, as well as going over the charter, which I sent a copy to everybody. It's pretty straightforward. There's definitely some things we probably need to take action on sooner than later, which is really the impetus for this meeting, which is looking at an soliciting for an external auditor or an independent auditor. And so the last agenda item there before adjourning is kind of a brief outline of potential future meetings to accomplish that. So I prepared a lovely Venn diagram, which I've never done before, but I was really excited to do this because the internal audit and external audit are vastly different. External audit is really focused on the materiality and what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, I can't even think of it right now. The accuracy of our financial statements. So it's really looking at our numbers. Are they reported correctly? Has everything been categorized properly? Are we following proper GAAP and GASB when we're recognizing revenues and expenditures? Are they in the proper period? All of those things. So it's very regulatory focused, very technical. So that's what our external auditors come in and do. Of course, they know all of the regulations that go into preparing those financial statements, but mostly it's making sure that we're presenting a true and accurate picture. Sometimes they will discover fraud because they do a lot of testing. They will pull over, 200 documents and then come in and look at the backup for all of that. They're essentially making sure that what we're reporting, our capital costs, everything is really falling where it needs to be. But that doesn't mean that they will always catch fraud. It's not necessarily their area of expertise and they're not doing that level of deep dive. Where internal audit is more focused on prevention of fraud, waste, and abuse. So I've listed ways that we accomplish that here in North Salt Lake. We have internal controls to prevent that. We have proper separation of duties. We regularly train our staff. We have good financial policies. So on the back end, even though we're all going towards the same goal of protecting the city's assets, either the city's credit rating or financial reputation or its actual assets, like it's the buildings and cash. So internal audit is generally verified by self-assessment. We do the fraud risk assessment every year, but the audit committee oversight has a role in each of these areas of audit. And I'm really excited to get that established with this group. So the audit committee charter has three areas of focus or responsibility. The first is the external audit focus. And over here to the left, you can kind of see, and it's at the top of the charter, kind of how the committee came about. It was by resolution back in 2020. Came out of some action of the state auditor's office where there was some audit work that was done and a recommendation both for the fraud risk assessment to be conducted annually, but for an actual internal audit function at each local government. So the original charter that you have copies of is probably largely boilerplate from that time period. Mm-hmm. I can tell somebody wrote it who didn't work in local government just because of some of the words used, and so I mean, I would recommend at some point when this committee really gets rolling to take a look at that and make it work better for our organization. But for now, it has a good launching point for the things that we need to do most immediately, which is recommending the selection of an external auditor. So I think I've mentioned a couple times now, both last year and this year, that we've had the same audit firm, I think since 2009, it might be longer than that. And so you always have this concern over independence. You don't want your finance director and the external auditing firm to have, you don't want their relationship to be too close, right? You don't ever want there to be this point in time where maybe the you would feel like the external auditor would overlook lapses in financial
mm-hmm.
reporting or things like that. And that's one of the reasons why they want to get a new firm in every 4 to 5 years is best practice to come
So can
in.
I point out all the committees that I'm on all use Jem and Richards?
And I remember you saying that, and to me, a few meetings ago, and to me that was a little bit of a red flag where I thought...
And I thought that there is a lack of competition when they
yeah.
can set their rate at $30,000
right.
for an audit. Not that that may be out of sync, but they don't have to worry.
There's about 10 big firms that rotate between all the local governments.
So the one exception was the sewer district. Used Kimley Horn,
okay.
who was a tenant in my building.
Okay.
And we had to get a special exemption from the state to extend our audit deadline because
Uh-oh.
the guy disappeared.
Oh no.
And nobody knew what happened to him.
Did you find
no.
his body?
No, they were really mum about it. Like yes, he's maybe he was going to Wendover.
Could be.
So maybe let's not use them.
The very first year that I worked here at the city, our regular staff that would come and assist with the external audits actually had a medical condition and had to leave the firm about October, November, which is a very busy time for our audit. And so we kind of picked up the pieces and moved forward. And so while I haven't worked with this firm that we have now before coming to North Salt Lake, they have been good. They're new to me, so I feel like there's still some independence there. We don't have the same staff audit team that was coming in before I got here just because they've had some turnover. So
yeah.
I feel like we're still mostly in compliance there, but best practice is to to swap out every so often. But yeah, that same thing happened to us is I had been here 6 months at the city and I'm emailing the auditing firm like, I haven't heard from this person. I haven't heard. We've got 2 to 3 weeks left to get this wrapped up. And they were like, we are so sorry, we were trying to figure out. The person's medical condition actually was impacting their work, so they didn't even necessarily have a trail of where they were at. It was kind of sad. It was really sad.
Do you know, that example you were using earlier,
mm-hmm.
That's the opposite is one of the red flags when you have an employee that never
I've
will
heard
leave.
That, yeah.
It's because they always have to cover their trail
mm-hmm.
every day, and they'll never go on vacation, and they'll never,
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch what was the one with the lady with the horses? There's a show on Netflix. She was a city. Anyways, we probably don't want to get too much into fraud because then we'll just not sleep at night. Yeah.
But to Lisa's point, I'm sure that there's a framework of what a standard fee is. But have we done that at all where we've reached out to a few firms to see where they...
Mm-hmm.
bid out?
We haven't. It's pretty easy to go out onto the transparency website and take a look and see what people are paying for their audits.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to do a little bit of that. One thing that I noticed is all audits with the COVID money coming through increased by about 25% because there was a new component of reporting. And they just never came back down.
Yeah.
So even though we're not doing
hmm.
that level of reporting again, I just feel like everything else is still inflated
yeah.
as well. I don't know. I mean, I guess it makes
That's
sense.
Interesting.
The cost of hiring accountants or their CPAs is more than it has been in the past, but there were some exceptions that happened with getting all that federal money in that extended the audit process.
And
same thing
negotiate?
Happened to healthcare and higher education. Once
yeah,
the federal government
everything.
Got involved, everything.
But it will be good to go out and do a competitive bidding process.
Mm-hmm.
Other external audit functions, review of the annual fraud risk assessment and present any concerns to the external auditor. So right now I present that, it's a self-assessment, every entity does their own self-assessment and scoring on that. Do we have these types of policies in place? What are our controls? It's kind of a yes and no, check the box type thing. But it would be helpful for this group to review that and present any concerns that they have with our controls to our external auditors.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's quite common where the external auditing firm will reach out to the elected officials and ask, are there certain areas you want to investigate? Are there things that you're concerned about to see if they need to change their scope a little bit or maybe change the focus? Obviously, every year they're required to focus on certain things that are set out by state statute, and it rotates, I think, every 4 or 5 years so that at least the same area of finance is looked at every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every 5 years. But they could certainly change that up a little bit if there was a concern. And I feel like this group probably would be the one to know enough and be knowledgeable enough about our financial statements and financial position just from our meetings to bring those up.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely an opportunity for that. Review of the draft financial report, the ACFR. So right now the process is they come and present for about an hour, that we try and keep them to a half hour in January to the entire city council. But the way the charter reads, that presentation would happen with this group in advance in a draft form. And then this group would recommend to the city council, we recommend approval of the, you know, audited financial reports for fiscal year 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe a more informal setting, but also you'd be working directly with the external auditor. So instead of listening so much to a presentation, it might be more interactive where you could ask questions like when, as he's going through and reading all those lines, like, well, what does this mean? Or what kind of concerns that you have? So I feel like it leaves more room for that kind of work, which we haven't necessarily had in the past, that level of engagement. Are we okay?
Oh, yeah, you're
okay.
I'm just trying to hit both.
Okay. Sometimes there is a corrective action plan that is recommended by the external auditor. We happen to have this, and I think in our 2021 audit related to the federal funds, that we didn't have a federal awards policy in place. And so the audit committee would then recommend a course of action, make sure that staff is staying on top of that, and then present or report back to the governing body on any actions that are moving towards those efforts. Implementation. As far as internal audit focus, recommend selection appointment of an internal auditor. So we're not a large enough organization to have a full-time internal audit function. Even Davis County, like I said, that was new for them when I first started there in 2015 to have a full-time internal auditor, and that's a organization with 800 plus employees and elected officials with a fiduciary responsibility. One of the things that the Utah Government Finance Officers Association is working on is putting together a consortium of internal auditors within the state. It requires a special certification, it's the CIA is what it's called, but that would be willing to maybe do exchange type work as far as coming in and taking a look at internal practices for things like separation of duty, basically internal controls that will prevent fraud.
But doesn't the external audit make those kind of recommendations too?
Not on the internal side. You know, you can engage an auditing firm to do internal audit work for you. But the idea is to find something more cost effective. So the internal auditor at Davis County, they have a full-time internal auditor, and his sole responsibility was reviewing complaints that came in. Concerns, complaints, investigate. So they would do internal investigations, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The cash box at the treasurer's office was short $20, or somebody heard that somebody was misusing a county asset, a vehicle, or something like that. And investigate those types of things. So a lot of it is investigative in nature. Luckily, we haven't had any of those complaints that have required an investigation or a full audit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually involves interviews and documentation and things like that. But it is nice to bring an outside set of eyes in to take a look at the controls that we have put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about some of those. One of the things that's most important is that we don't allow any single employee to complete a financial transaction from beginning to end. There's always checkpoints along the way. And so I'll kind of go over a couple of our processes. But again, it's me coming up with the processes based on my knowledge of audit and fraud. And I do it quite a bit. I mean, I worked in the auditor's office, but it would be nice to have an outside set of eyes to say, well, you could just do this. What other preventive measures?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly what we're looking at is we want to protect our employees. We don't want our employees to be in situations where they have opportunity. So when we talk about the fraud triangle, we'll talk about that a little bit, because it really is the only thing that we can control.
Seems like it's always the little, you know, Tabiona or something.
Yes, absolutely.
That's
right.
Like,
it is.
I'm the mayor and the CFO and I'm always amazed that these little towns, you can steal $200,000 before anyone notices. And you think, like, wow.
Yeah, because
that's
got to
be like
a
3-year budget
or
something.
Yeah, exactly.
So Heidi, just a question on this one. Do you think there's a time in the future where we might hire a third party? in our city, or is this something the committee
would? My thought
would
be to get this committee up and running, get a regular set meeting of schedules, handle the current most immediate things, which is that we need to hire a new external auditor to be better in compliance there. I think we need to, before we do that, update our procurement policy. And then maybe we can go into a deep dive of each of our policies, look to see if we want to make amendments, and then bring in somebody at that point once we have a better understanding of where we're at. So I think we're maybe a year out from that, from bringing in an outside
set of eyes. But
it
would be like for a week or something, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It would definitely not be as extensive as the external audit.
It wouldn't be. It would be like, it makes me, remember when the efficiency experts were kind of a big deal, where they come in and just kind of interview people? What kind of concerns do you have? Tell me about how this process works. Just really mostly looking at procedural things and looking for gaps and
ways things could be done safer and better.
Yes, yes, exactly.
One thing I think we'll never see is from the external auditor is the finding saying
they're
using us too much. You need to rotate to someone else.
Yeah. And you wouldn't want to use the same firm. You wouldn't want to have the same firms.
And it seems like the standard, I mean, it's a national standard probably, but it seems like every time we get the audit report, it's like we don't see any major aberrations or something. It doesn't really tell us anything from year to year.
Which is good.
It's just standard language.
But yeah.
So what they're auditing for is to make sure that the numbers that we're putting in the system and reporting to the public
are accurate. Yeah.
And so that I mean, they do a lot of testing to make sure. They review all the backup documentation. They do review our minutes. They review all of our minutes and make sure they review our contracts. So they make sure that purchases over $25,000 have been brought before city council, that we're in compliance there. They will often ask me things that have happened in city council meetings and ask me to provide the backup for this type of activity.
Yeah.
So they are doing some of that, but mostly they're going to be focused on, are we reporting things? Are we reporting our committed cash properly versus our unrestricted balances versus our reserve for, you know, they're really looking at the details of those financial statements.
But they're doing spot checking.
Them.
They're doing spot checking and
random
verification.
Yeah.
Because that's the part. If it's not verified and they don't do that, then really it doesn't mean much.
Yeah.
And they're doing that.
So I've already sent them all of our bank reconciliations for the year. They get a full listing of all of our financial transactions for the year. They get our account, all of our accounts payable registers and check registers for the year. They'll probably pick 100 checks to look at. Based on, and it's, I mean, you can tell they're always really looking for something because they will pick large checks, they will pick checks to one-off vendors, they will, you can tell they're really picking a pretty good sample to look at. So my expectation would be that they would catch something, but that's not their sole focus.
Yeah.
And they will never sign off that, you know, they're looking for this, that our financial statements are free of material misstatements.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think they make that just essentially for the bond rating agencies. If you want to look at our financial position, these accurately represent the city's financial position in each of its funds.
What is our bond rating?
I think we're a AA- or AA.
I don't know off the top of my head. But
yeah, I just wondered.
It's good.
We haven't had an increase in our bond rating since 2010. We're probably not in a position to look for one now. But when you get to that point, and when we get, you know, when we get our debt ratio down low,
at
times when we're contemplating borrowing, we'll go out and get a bond, an updated bond rating.
That's right.
But we haven't done that for a long time.
There's a process you go through where they take a deeper dive into your financial statements. Other internal audit functions of the audit committee, so oversight of the internal audit functions, some of the things we were just talking about, assess areas of risk that may require additional evaluation and testing, monitor management's implementation and performance of internal audit recommendations, and address complaints received through the state auditor's office fraud hotline or other external sources. And then the last two items are just administrative requirements to hold regular meetings. The requirement now in the charter is 4 times a year.
Not once
every
4 years.
Working on becoming compliant with that.
We flipped that.
And then review of the charter as necessary. And I would recommend that just to make it better suit our operations here at the city. a listing of our current financial policies. Oh, that didn't go as I expected. I must have hit.
So Heidi, I got a question.
Yeah.
How do we,
there we go.
How does this all interact with, and I don't even know, is Dougal still the guy? What is his role? Does he, the state auditor?
So his role really isn't to come in and do any type of investigative or audit work unless there is a very significant concern. That's when the state auditor's office comes in. In fact, the situation I was explaining earlier about the gentleman who had the gambling problem, we at the county did bring in the state auditor's office to review because that individual did have access to our financial systems. And as far as we could tell, we had enough controls in place that they could not have taken any money from the county. But we wanted to let them know of this situation
mm-hmm.
because it had the potential to become
mm-hmm.
so publicly terrible. I was explaining we had an employee at Davis County that was hired right before me. I started there in 2015 that worked in the clerk auditor's office. He was actually the internal auditor for the county who was a CPA, came from a large CPA firm here in Utah. And he ended up having a gambling problem. And we noticed some problems with his performance and terminated him. And a month later, he robbed a bank at gunpoint.
Oh, my. That is like
and
the
so when
ultimate
the news,
irony.
When the news stories came out, some of the news places didn't get it right. And they said he worked in the recorder's office. And so that was kind of nice. But he actually worked in the clerk auditor's office. So, of course, we did all of the forensic accounting we could do. But we also brought in the state auditor's office at that point.
One thing that the auditor's office does that I know that I utilize is you go and see if they've done their filings. There's annual filings that every
sure.
organization has to make, goes to the auditor,
mm-hmm.
and you can see if they're minding the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're 2-3 years late, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And then if there's a problem that gets reported, you do go to the state auditor and say, we have a feeling this guy's
yep.
gambling.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. As far as those reports, so the state auditor's office has really cracked down this new auditor. I mean, I would say you couldn't be out of 6 months compliance with non-reporting without having your sales tax or your tax distributions withheld, because that's how they get you to submit your reports.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought Dougal was running for something this year. I think he's not
going
to be the auditor any longer.
He didn't run again, but I thought he was running for something at the federal level,
yeah.
potentially.
Yeah, I think he was.
So it's sad to see him go to something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like him?
He was, so.
I liked him personally.
He showed up at the Weber County Mosquito Abatement Christmas party and said, what the hell does it have to do with killing mosquitoes? And the guy resigned, the director of the, yeah. And I just thought, okay, that's. I mean, I'm all for being frugal, Dougal.
I think
sure.
it's funny
sure.
when they gave the assignment to Dougal to monitor the misuse of bathrooms.
Oh.
Yeah.
he didn't like that job.
He has had some interesting
Was that a gender?
The transgender thing.
Okay,
yeah.
I was going to say.
In fact, it can be reported
yeah,
on the hotline.
That just, yeah.
So it
was,
can be reported.
That was an audit?
Was that?
There were false claims. I think
he
they
was,
just
his
counted
office
anyways.
Was charged
was
with compliance.
Like,
oh.
Everybody would say, listen,
so,
that is
yes.
kind of hot.
And he griped about it on the news.
They were being
insane
to
we don't know how to do this.
You're giving us a hard time.
That's pretty funny.
Where you can put in a complaint on the, so this
yeah.
is where we have directed, if we do have the public that has concerns, they would be directed to submit their concerns to the state auditor's office, and they can do that here through the fraud hotline is what they call it.
Have we ever had that we know of?
I am not aware of any.
Mm-hmm.
So when I worked at the county, they had an external auditing firm, I think they were called Lighthouse, that took in any audit, you know, anonymous audit complaints and then funneled them to the
mm-hmm.
elected official. But this is how it is addressed per our financial policies. Let me get back into my presentation. Is it gonna let me back? There we go. So the technical side of our financial accounting policies, and this is in our audit, we put that all out to the public. When we capitalize things, what our capitalization thresholds are, how long we capitalize our equipment for those types of things. Those are on pages 28 to 36 of this document. It's in everything in note one. It's probably a little dry for somebody who doesn't work with financial statements every day, but it does kind of outline what our policies and procedures are on that. As part of all of the revamping of audit here at the city and initiated by the state auditor's office, we also have the ethical behavior policy. So
can I ask, sorry, I know I keep interrupting you.
No, you're good.
So in what I always call it the real world, in the real world,
thank you.
You know, the IRS kind of holds your feet to the fire on capitalizing some things.
Oh,
for tax reasons.
Yes.
So a government entity.
A government entity.
Oh. Yes.
What's our just depreciation schedules or?
Oh, so we typically will capitalize improvements anywhere between 20 and 40 years, equipment between 5 and 10 years. The least amount of capitalization would probably, the lowest threshold would be for police vehicles, which we capitalize only for 5 years. Though I was just working through our purchases and disposals for last year, and we disposed of some police vehicles that were 11, 12 years old.
Sure, yeah.
So we do keep them longer than that. We're not required to, but it's just how long we record the expense on our books.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So just handed out the ethical behavior policy pledge, which is distributed to every new hire at the city, and they actually have to sign off a pledge that they've read this and are in compliance with it, don't have any conflicts with it.
In fact, I think you guys have all signed
it.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was going to say,
every volunteer,
like I
said, every board member has done so. The thing that I think is interesting is that it even includes guidance for post-employment, because there are certain things you shouldn't be, you know, engaging in even a year within that first year of leaving employment here with the city.
Before you become a lobbyist.
Where is that one?
I think it's at the very end.
Oh, after leaving, yeah.
So that is something that is helpful. We do try and do fairly frequent, regular training on ethics and fraud with employees and staff. It was something that I focused on when I first started working here, mainly because I had a pre-canned training that I did all the time for county employees on separation of duties, procurement fraud, things just to watch out for. Because sometimes people who kind of don't think under that lens of ways that you can kind of go wrong don't really see their actions maybe as being, I don't know,
questionable.
Being questionable, that's a good word. I'm always thinking of that phrase, avoiding the appearance of impropriety. That's always something that we want to emphasize. And sometimes people have, you know, really strange questions. Like, we had a home that was next to the Davis County offices, an empty home that we had our legal defenders in. It was run down. But we had a employee, when they were tearing it down, that wanted to take the oven out of it or something like that. And it was just old, and it was worth nothing. But it was like, it has to go through all of the formal surplus. Even if it's going to be junked, it has to be identified. It's going to be junked. And sometimes employees couldn't say, like, well, that's just getting rid of something entirely when it could still be useful. And it was like, if we assessed that it was useful, then we would have to put it out to bid, to public auction, and let everybody bid on it if it really had value. So, but we can't just let employees take leftover, unused things that were purchased by the government entity. We have a credit card policy. We have, obviously, our personnel policies and procedures manual. Every employee signs that they've received a copy of that. That talks about all of our processes for hiring, selection, discipline, benefits, eligibility. And then actually one of our ordinances is Chapter 11 in our city code, which is procurement. So future policies to consider are an update to the procurement policy. And that would be something that would better explain a process that allows us to select a vendor or a contractor based on qualifications or preset criteria, not just cost. We always talk about the highest responsible bidder or the best responsible bidder, but we haven't really defined what that would be. It always does have a cost component, maybe 10 or 20%, but you would set maybe, you know, 5 sets of criteria, like experience, their staff resumes, how many years of experience do the staff have, how many years of experience does the firm have, what types
jobs.
Of similar jobs that they've done, things like that. And it could be different for every every type of procurement, but you'd kind of have some criteria, so it was really obvious in scoring, and a preset group of individuals who are going to sit on that selection committee.
Now, these other ones were updated in 2020 then?
They were created in 2020, so they're new for 2020.
Okay.
2020 forward. A cash and fund balance reserves. This would be helpful just so that when our cash balances get too low, we have kind of a preset idea of what that number would be. It would definitely help me have something more impactful to report during my monthly finance reports, to say here's our cash balances, here's where it falls with our policy. And it would be different for each fund. You might want a higher cash balance in one fund over another. I don't think it's necessarily a percent of overall fund balance or expenditures. It might be more like 9 months operating expenditures or something like that.
I was going to say, we always try to do like a year. If I have a year.
So setting those thresholds would be a nice thing for this group to take a look at, what our costs have been, what would be appropriate. An investment policy. So right now all of our funds are invested with PTIF, and we're getting great interest rate on that. But at some point we might want to set up some outside investments. But you certainly don't want to do so without setting up some parameters of who and when can do that. It's a treasurer function, the investment. It wouldn't be something that I would oversee, but you'd want to talk about what kind of cash reserves you'd want to keep, what kind of liquidity you'd want to keep, kind of set those standards to assist staff then perform the administrative function of investing. I don't know that we always have so many projects going on at the same time. I always feel like we can't have things tied up, but you know, in CDs and things like that, but there are definitely entities that do that and make that work for themselves. So
and have liquidity
So I mean there's definitely ways to do it where you stagger your investments so you have something rolling off every 6 months, and so that might be something, an option for the future. These last two are part of recommendations from the fraud risk assessment. And we get a total score based on the financial policies that we have in place implemented. These are worth 5 points each on the scoring criteria. We are already in the lowest risk category, but we could put together a cash receipting and deposits policy. That would be very simple because right now we just follow the guidance set out by the Money Management Council. I think every local government does that with deposits within 3 days. We certainly have certain requirements for holding on to records related to cash receipts and things like that. And then IT and computer security, which I haven't really investigated that, but I imagine it would be something like how often we test our systems. We're going to test our systems X amount of times per year. We're going to follow these measures. It could be as simple as that, just that we have some, we're going to train our employees at least once a year, that type of
thing. So that's what I don't sleep at night about. I think I just hear horror stories all the time in the IT world.
Well, what was it that just crashed a month ago? Now I can't remember.
The airlines.
It took down the world for a day and a half. What system was that? Anyway.
It affected the airlines. So,
and it did affect the airlines, but everything else as well. So that was a problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of large organizations immediately went off that platform.
Well, and part of that, too, maybe, is that you have a consultant that you have under contract or something, in addition to internal control that you have an outside.
Well, we have, you know, our company that we use for IT, I've asked them a couple of times, you know, they're like, yeah, everything's good, you know. Everything's good.
Do they specialize in that, though? Like, are they?
I don't think so.
It's just kind of, they know about it, but.
We pay for security. So that's different than a policy statement that talks about behavior. So everyone who has a device needs to be trained on how to properly use that device so that we don't have more risk.
Mm-hmm. Passwords need to be reset.
Yeah, one of our policies that could be related to IT is we have a no pornography policy on phones and computers. So, you know, pornography sites are kind of historically known for being sites where you can get your devices can become infected with viruses or whatever. I mean, that sounds weird.
Everyone gets infected with pornography.
So
infections everywhere.
Or other sites, you know, and so we just need to train and we train employees on how to safely use their devices, but you know, the policy that Heidi's talking about is really a written policy,
right,
where we would describe those things and be able to say to the employees, here's three or four pages of a written policy, please follow these instructions.
Mm. Not so much a firewall company that we
Because we have that
with.
and
but I mean, in the policy we say we will have a consultant
on
the side.
We could.
That's
we,
what I mean.
We could
in the policy.
Could.
It's almost like the consultancy external auditor coming in and testing this system and testing the effectiveness of the controls
which
that we put in place, which would be the policy. Is our policy working?
But, and we should have ETS come in and take a work session and talk to us about what they're doing. Then you'll know what we're paying for, because we do pay for some pretty robust
that would be really
security. I'm kind of with the mayor. I think someday we're going to deal with a breach of some kind, because everybody
with
does.
With the phishing emails that come in.
I got one
from
John Rueckert yesterday.
You know, they're crazy.
Said,
by the way, where are my cards?
Hey, you know what? You're my best friend. You need a lot of help.
I bet you get a lot.
Just in the next 10
I get a lot.
You have money. I get it from Brian all the
time.
That
drives me
like
nuts.
Constantly.
And they say they can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does drive me crazy.
I, you know, maybe in hindsight, I should have changed. Not just taking over mayor or something, you know, just got a whole new email.
Maybe. Well, we can always try that.
Using Len Larvey's old one.
Anyway, somehow there's, somehow that happens.
We could put require multi-factor authentication.
Which
we've
done.
We don't require password refreshing every so often. We should.
It's true.
One of the things Davis County
did remember so many passwords.
Well,
they implemented a passphrase.
That's where everyone puts their password on their computer.
Because
they have to change it all the time.
Exponentially better at preventing bots from coming in and running passwords through. The longer your password is, I can't remember
the two-part authentication seems to me is bulletproof. I don't know.
And then the automatic expiration if you don't renew your password.
Oh yes,
right.
That's what I think helps.
Every 3 months.
Yep,
that's how the state is. I've noticed.
Yeah,
I think what I worry more about is a hack into the city system where the water goes down, you know, like it stops the water functioning, or the
almost a terrorist
something that would cause infrastructure failure.
That's true. I hope that we're investing in those in anti-fraud.
I'm sort of thinking that our what do you call it, composting thing? I'm thinking that's been terrorized.
Make it stink
more.
I think
there's somebody's putting bad stuff into it.
I think Elisa would probably agree with you.
All right. So some internal controls that we have put into place to prevent the only thing we can, which is opportunity. We're just talking about all the ways our policies will prevent the opportunity. If you have a longer password, you have less opportunity for somebody to hijack your account, things like that. But the fraud triangle has the three components: pressure, rationalization, and opportunity. And typically, for the certified fraud examiners and those that do this all day, every day for a living, you need these three components to really put yourself to be exposed. But the difficult thing for an organization is the only thing we can really prevent is an opportunity. We can't prevent financial pressure for our employees. We can't prevent somebody who has a gambling problem. We can't, you know, mitigate those factors. And then you'll always have some employees who can justify because they feel underappreciated, or I've done this extra thing and so I deserve this. And so it's a combination of, it's not necessarily you have a cash box that's available, it's you have a cash box available to an employee who feels underappreciated, who also has pressures at home or in a personal situation, and that's when you're really at risk. And I told Ken this, I'm going to tell them. So it's from the AGA, the Association of Governmental Accountants, and they say you always should consider the 10-80-10 rule. 10% of people will never, ever, ever commit fraud. They just won't do it. 10% of people are actively looking for opportunities and will engage if the opportunity presents itself, and 80% of people will do it if they're under pressure or under certain circumstances. And I don't know if I believe that.
80%?
I don't know if it's just because then I need to see
good.
Their sources on this, because it did come out of a consortium of state auditors, and state auditors can be a little
negative.
Well, as we know, they can have a gloomy outlook, because I like to think people are better than that. I like to think
but there's a high probability, there's a majority.
But the more we consider that opportunity, the better we can protect ourselves and our staff. I mean, the idea is to protect our staff. And I'll show you some things that we have put into place here at the city for that.
So the other thing that's always tough in is collusion.
Mm-hmm.
If two people want to do something, we're running out. I'll shut up.
Then you have two in that 10% that would always, they get together.
You get two people colluding.
Again, 10, 80, 10, I Googled that to see, okay, show me some other financial sources for this. There's all kinds of 10, 80, 10 rules or 20, 40, 20 statistics. So I don't even know how you get to that number, but I was really surprised. I know when we had a full-time internal auditor at Davis County, I had asked him the same thing, and I thought, this is crazy to me, this fraud triangle. How often, and some of the stories, because we would train at the county on this and explain real life examples and real life government examples. And he gave me a similar statistic. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he kind of mirrored that because I just remember being shocked at that middle number, how big that percentage was that could be swung. So ways that we prevent opportunity here at North Salt Lake is we have multiple points of authorization and review. Generally more than one person is reviewing transactions. I'm involved in a lot of that. And I also don't have any authority to really, I was complaining about this, but I don't get to spend any money. I don't get in the financial system. I don't create transactions. I review the transactions that are in there. If things are miscoded, I'll make corrections. We don't have any one person who can take a financial transaction from beginning to end. We don't have somebody who can enter an invoice and create a check and mail a check to somebody without any other stops in place. We don't have somebody who can create a new employee and then push through a payroll file and pay an ACH. Nobody has sole custody of a financial transaction from beginning to end. We did have, when I first got here, some overlap of responsibilities between the finance director and the city treasurer. We don't operate as backup for each other. An example was when Stacy was out of town, she was out of the country, and we didn't have a backup to transfer funds of cash into our operating account. And I talked to our external auditors about that. I said, initially, the finance director and the city treasurer would move money back and forth, but I'm not comfortable with that because I'm auditing and I'm reconciling these bank accounts. I don't want to be touching the movement of money if I'm the one reconciling the accounts. Mm-hmm. And we always figured we could have Ken come in if we were in a really precarious situation. And we kind of were. Stacy came back and then she was sick for a week after her trip. But we figured it out and made do, and she was able to kind of come in and make that transfer. And so we did get to put it into test. Can we still operate with our day-to-day financial activity if we have one cog missing? Can we wait? What other factors can we put into place rather than to give me carte blanche ability to act in her place?
Yeah. What did you do? Did you wait?
But we waited till she was well enough, and then she came in and made the transfer. But also, she has a laptop and could have done it from home. It wasn't working, so we found out. If she died, we would have Ken do it.
Or incapacitated.
Yes.
We'd have to transfer it to me.
We would have to transfer the responsibility temporarily for, a temporary period to somebody else who also isn't managing any of the financial transactions. So another somebody who's as independent as possible, but also has authority and that has some, I guess, skin in the game if you were to get caught doing something.
Well, I think
it'd be a high-level employee, again, but that's not working in the day-to-day financial act.
Okay. And the one credit card that's in your safe, right? Is there just one that...
Well, there's a high-balance credit card that the physical card is locked up, but we use that account to pay
the
some
account
of our
all
bills.
The time. Yeah. I see. It's just the physical card is.
Yeah.
Because most of our credit cards have very low limits. We limit our exposure. I'm just
defined.
Not saying it's low. $5,000. Some are as low as $500 or $1,000 for folks that are just using it for small transactions. But we do have a card with a $50,000 limit because we have been in a bind before where we have had a vendor who needed to order supplies for a water project or something like that, and we had to preemptively buy something. And so we're able to do that with a credit card because we couldn't do it through check.
Doesn't happen super often, though.
One of the other things that we've done is we've eliminated cash because cash is really hard to track. It was really hard to track the golf course. And so when I first started working here, we had different points where cash is being collected at the golf course. Usually when cash is accepted, you want two people to be there to close out a till at the end of the night. That bank, that money did not be sitting in a safe. You want it to go right to the bank. All of these things were really unable to put in place with seasonal workers running the shop. And so that was one of the reasons why we eliminated accepting cash. And it was kind of just in time now that the Grill and Event Center is on board, because they have five different point of sale systems right now that they could potentially be receiving cash into. It would be very, very difficult to track who receded what from what golf course operation into what system.
And they're all cashless? So if you do
just
a hot chocolate at this Christmas winter,
right,
it's going to be cashless.
For now, I mean,
our
if we change our mind,
cash,
we would need to go in and do some training for employees. If that were to ever change, we could certainly put processes in place.
Well, for example, checks are cash. I pay my monthly bill with a check.
Mm-hmm.
That check is probably automatically deposited. But can someone come in and say, I need to pay with cash?
Absolutely.
At the front counter?
Yes.
Then that cash is taken to the bank.
Yes, that
and
same
what's
day.
This,
by
the
treasurer.
Same day. And
by the treasurer.
Okay.
Or within 3 days. And the treasurer, she does have a backup.
Okay.
But it's more off-site, outside of the building, where you have not necessarily employees with a financial background,
mm-hmm,
receiving cash, clerks,
I anticipate
and things like
this
that.
Winter thing up at the golf course. There's going to be a lot of kids and family that show up with $10 and want to buy a hot chocolate and...
It could be. We'll
they
have
may
to
not
address
have a card.
But,
kids don't
but,
have cards a lot of times.
Well, I was thinking the vendor would be doing that, but it
I'll
might
have
be
to check. I was thinking the vendor may be selling some hot chocolate, but we'll have the cafe available
open
too.
Yeah.
I think he said the hot chocolate and the whatever was going to be with the ticket.
Yeah,
well,
maybe.
And there will be like a food truck. I think he's setting up like a food truck kind of thing. So maybe he's cashless too, and we're just
yeah.
a percent
well,
of that.
Like
we just clean a percent
I mean,
of that. But
and all it takes is training. All it takes
yeah.
is bringing in our seasonal employees. We have so much turnover with our seasonals,
mm-hmm.
though, in the pro shop that it was really challenging, and expecting to have two people there to close out
yeah.
the cash drawer at the end of the night when the
mm-hmm.
shop is closing was just a bit of a challenge. It can be accomplished. It just requires...
It's just when the golf clubs ended up missing, right? That you were worried about.
A little more oversight. I'm not aware of any golf
I'm
clubs
kidding.
That went missing. Okay.
I think we've handled the merchandise
Were you
actually
testing
really well.
Me there? I'm like, I'm not aware of any
because,
golf clubs that went missing.
Heidi will go inventory the merchandise with Tyler.
We do.
Oh,
that's great.
Yeah, so we weren't not doing that before.
No.
Yeah. She's doing that.
Remember?
Yeah. I'll go down
years
and do
ago?
Inventory with Tyler.
Oh. You go back to day one.
Colin Wood, remember? Years ago?
Well, and Scott.
Yeah. Colin could have been fired.
So here's a couple of our processes, just because we're running short on time, and I'm really sorry. I didn't create an org chart of the finance staff, but I wanted to walk through kind of what some of our internal processes are, because while I don't have a step-by-step policy, processes change all the time because the steps change based on updates to our financial system, right? They add a new step or things like that have changed. But our utility billing clerk, so we have, here's a scenario. We have a customer close out their account. They close escrow. The escrow company pays their last of their water bill. They also paid the last of their water bill because the escrow company always pays like an estimated amount that they get from us. So they have a balance on their account. So every month when April is preparing utility billing, she'll find those accounts that have closed and figure out who still has a balance and prepare a listing of adjustments for those accounts so that they can be refunded. She submits that list to me because it also includes any small balance write-offs, which is anything under $5, which for the whole last month we had one for $2, minor things like that. Anytime we've adjusted an account, it's a management tracking report, so she gives that to me to review any type of cash or balance adjustment that has been done outside of the regular billing process. But she then, when she wants to process refunds, she gives a list to Stacy, who goes into each utility account and ensures that they are actually due a refund, that their account is closed out. We've done everything proper for closing out their account. It's not that we've misapplied a payment or something like that, because every now and again, their payment will get applied to somebody else's account because they come in through Express Bill Pay. Weird stuff happens. So she verifies that and authorizes them to then get paid out. And Alicia will put that through our check preparation process. another sample example of something that happens quite frequently is updates to employee records. And not just talking about when they change their address or contact information, but they've had their annual performance review or they've had a promotion, something like that. We have a new hire, we're setting up a brand new employee. So we have internal paperwork that gets signed by both the department head and the city manager. It's called a PATH, a personnel action form. It gets forwarded to Sue. Sue is a little auditor herself, and she reviews all that documentation to ensure that we hired the person at the right position at the right price. She does all of the data entry on setting up the new employee. She also makes sure that, yes, we have a background check on this person. Yes, we've done a drug screening on this person. They passed the drug screening. She makes sure everything for their new hire, or if it's an annual review, the review has been conducted. We've got a copy of that review. Any backup documentation required to support the change in our financial system, she has that and puts it in the employee file. And then, and I told Sue this is to protect her, at the before each pay period, I run a report of all of the changes to employee records, and anything that's been changed, she has to give me the backup documentation. So then I review all of the documents that she's reviewed to see that I have the two signatures for a new hire or the two signatures for a wage increase for an annual review. I ensure that the person that we've hired isn't Sue's cousin or nephew, that we actually have all the proper authorizations in place. And that's what I told her. I said, we hire so many seasonals. We could hire 80 seasonals in a single month. How do I know it would be so easy for you? I know you wouldn't do that, but to slip in a nephew, a cousin, mm-hmm. somebody, and it could very well look legitimate if I don't review that paperwork. So I review the hard copies of all the paperwork and then sign off on that. And
by the
she's
way,
very understanding of that.
April is awesome. And
she is
I was coming out one day and she was helping someone in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I
she's
thought,
amazing.
What a great asset.
She is great.
Yeah.
She has such a great attitude. She's so good. Yeah.
She's so
great.
Cheerful.
She's very cheerful. That's not even a word, but there's a fine. Find a procedural internal
you just
example
coined period. A new word.
You did.
I did.
Yeah.
You did.
I like it.
Just for check runs. So when we want to process a payment for a vendor, a department head initiates the process by preparing a purchase order. There's certain dollar thresholds. Oops. So clicky. Nope. I'm going to stay over here. So we have thresholds. So over $5,000, Ken will also sign that purchase order. Over $25,000 has to come before city council. And it's not each individual payment. I want to be clear on that because sometimes we have a $400,000 contract and we're making a payment on that contract that might be $50,000. The idea is that we are reviewing that the contract has been approved, that this vendor has been approved to be paid for this amount. Alicia will then coordinate and prepare the invoices for signature. Enter them for payment. She verifies that all of these signatures have been gathered. If not, she pushes them back and won't pay them. She prepares a list of payments to be made based on due date. She gives me that list to review. I review that list then of the proposed payments, what she's planning on paying that week for budgetary compliance, make sure we actually have the budgets to pay, the GL coding that we're recording to the proper area, and that we're recording things in the proper financial period. Stacy then gets the list, and she reviews it against the list of checks that Alicia then prepares, a list that's just a list of, here's the checks I want to cut. Stacy will review that list and ensure that bottom line, we have enough cash to make the payments. She'll make the transfer. She's the only one who can make that transfer if we need to. She's the only one who has custody of the check stock. So Alicia cannot prepare a check without giving the list of the checks she wants to cut to Stacy. Stacy says, okay, this total matches the report that Heidi authorized that we're going to pay. Alicia cuts the checks, gives the stack of checks back to Stacy, and Stacy verifies that Alicia hasn't changed a payee or anything on that. So, you know, obviously I approved we're going to pay, I don't know, Napa Auto $50. We can make sure that in the transition at some point in the authorizations, that amount hasn't been changed to pay, I don't know.
Alicia's brother.
Thank you.
$50.
And then last but not least, this great new step where they, all the backup with all the internal signatures. So if you've ever looked at those, you'll see they go by week, by pay period. and they coincide with our process of approvals.
Am I invited to this work session?
Yeah, the work session.
Just wanted to make sure we weren't in here.
No, we're not in here.
So this is a brief update on our external audit. We should, should I just wrap up and then we can get going to?
I guess so.
Our actual meeting?
Yeah.
So I do have an update. I'll send this out to all of you where we're at with our external audit. We're right on time. But I would propose that we have some future meetings to accomplish the things that we want to, to do, especially for this external audit selection. So I propose in November we invite our current auditors to have that discussion with this group. If you have any concerns, I can be part of that meeting or I don't have to be part of that meeting, but it's definitely an opportunity for you to talk about the, how the audit process is going.
I think it would be very helpful for you to be part of the meeting.
However it works out, I'm really just staff support for this group. And we can discuss potential changes. I would hope to have a draft, maybe policy, of what I would propose for that procurement model where you have scoring criteria. In January, meet with the external auditors to review this document. So we would have them do that big review in a more informal setting where you can ask questions, and if he's having you flip to page X, you can say, well, what does this really mean? It's, which is a little awkward in the formal presentation, and give you, this group the opportunity to send it forward to the full city council for approval. I'm hopeful that I could have maybe a draft RFP for external audit services that I could then, if this group authorizes and approves it, put out for submissions in March. This is a really tight timeline, but March, review responses and maybe have a recommendation. And then May, June, we're beginning the audit process again for the 2025 fiscal year, where we would be looking at the fraud risk assessment results for the year, and then also having an interest meeting, an entrance meeting for the 2025 audit with potentially our new external audit firm.
What is an entrance meeting?
So an entrance meeting is that they will kind of discuss the scope of the audit. They'll let you know everything that's on the state list of things that they're going to be looking at for the year, what that schedule is.
Okay.
Ask if you have any areas that you're concerned about. Just basically explain their process to you, what kind of staff they'll be interviewing. It's different for every firm. This firm hasn't done it with me since I've been here, but it's really, really helpful to bring the governing body or at least some representation to so that you have a better idea of what you're getting for that $30,000. So that's typically how the
just
audit process
when
goes.
You, when you mentioned they reviewed all our minutes, I thought, okay, they earned it.
Yeah.
I would be comfortable with you taking a shot at corrections to the charter.
Okay.
For our approval. But I don't know that I could read through it and figure out what doesn't really apply to us.
It's not a bad document. I just thought you might want to include or add to it. And maybe as we like really adopt the full function of this group, maybe look at some samples. Yeah, I just want to make sure we're
really
like
good
an effective,
presentation.
An effective
yeah.
group.
Yeah.
So
very
thank
helpful.
You. Thank you for letting me talk about audit.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, yeah.
We're excited to get this committee started and going.
Yes.
Keep
yeah.
it going.
This is
I
great.
I have wanted it for a long time.
Very needed.
It's important to all of us.
I've had three different actual audit committees appointed, but we've never met, so this has been really good.
We're committed.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Well, you guys can step right through here and get dinner, I think.
And thank you. I know it's hard to come before.
No.
I don't know if this schedule works, but
better for me.